Welcome to Vital Voices. Our guest today is Cheryl Bennett. On April 11th, 2016, she and her husband Dwight became the owners of the Broylesville Mill near the Limestone community in Washington County, Tennessee. They had come all the way from California to see the place that had once been owned by her great-grandparents times five. During that visit, Cheryl and Dwight decided to make the mill their permanent home. Mills where corn was ground into cornmeal and wheat into flour were community gathering places. At one time, Washington County had about 20 of them. The first grist mill was built on the site where the Bennetts now live, sometime prior to 1797. Cheryl and Dwight are attempting to learn and document the history of every one of the region's mills as they turn their new home, the Broylesville Mill, into a veritable museum of regional milling history. Cheryl Bennett, welcome to Vital Voices.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
What is it like to live in an old mill?
It's great. We're in a perfect location. We're part of our mill is a limestone foundation, so it actually sits in Little Limestone Creek. And because we're on the creek, it's green all around us. And then beyond that is it's mostly farmland. So the setting is beautiful. And then being inside a historic building that has an attachment to my family, I know this is going to sound kind of schmaltzy, but the first time I opened the door before we even bought the mill, I felt like I was home. I mean, a really strong, powerful feeling.
Tell me about the research you're conducting on mills.
Well, I'm in the process of trying to tell everybody more about milling. I didn't show you, but downstairs I have an archive and research center. And one of the goals of that, besides documenting everybody, that's the enslaved free people of color or the white citizens, and plus the buildings and everything of Broylesville, my other passion is to research all the mills that were ever in Washington County, starting back with the 1700s. And I can't tell you right now the numbers, because what you're finding with research is that a lot of the mills are overlapping. They're the same mill, but they were sold to somebody else and then they acquired a different name. But milling was extremely important here. Usually what they say is after you had shelter, you moved into a community and you had shelter, the very next thing that was built was a mill. It was both a necessity for food, and then in addition to that, it was also considered the first community gathering place.
Exactly. Of course, in order to have an operating mill, you had to have a water source. Tell us about our location, the water source that we sit next to now, and what Broylesville used to be like.
We're sitting on Little Limestone Creek, and so far I would say that probably there were more mills along Little Limestone, which I think it runs from, well, we're about a mile from the Nolichucky, so it ends there, and I think it starts in Johnson City somewhere, so that was a lot of mileage for there to be different mills. What Broylesville was like in the 1900s, it was actually what they considered a thriving community. Around that time, maybe a little bit before, there were 300 individuals. Today, I think we boast of 20, but we're in the process of growing, because not only, I am surprised, since we formed a nonprofit here, and the Broyles were huge families, and we've had people from Canada, and I would say the majority of states in the United States come to see the mill. And just recently, our good friends Jason and Sam bought the Mercantile on the corner, and they are working so hard to renovate that.
And I learned that you have a family connection to this mill.
I do. Because of the intermarriage of cousins, I have two fifth great grandfathers that settled Broyles-ville, and this would have been, we know for sure they were here by 1782. They could have been here a little bit before because there were other Broyles, their brothers, that settled here and also in Greene County. So they bought a lot of land, maybe, I think it was about 880 acres all the way down to the Nolichucky. And then the day after the one brother bought it, he divided it in half with his other brother. So my grandfather, Nicholas, divided it in half with his brother, Cyrus. And then, I don't know at what point, I've been unable to discover, it took on the name of Broyles-ville. I think Adam Broyles, who, there's the Adam Alexander Broyles house up the road, and they believe he built the mercantile down at the corner, and they think sometime around then is probably when it acquired the name.
What does it mean to you to have that kind of continuity, being in a place that has so much history with your own family?
It means everything. I come from a very small family, and we're really dispersed. So I think that's something I've always longed for, and even though it's generations past, I still really feel connected, and each little tidbit that I learn about them brings me closer to them, and I delight in sharing it with people. It just means everything.
You spent most of your life a long way from Washington County, Tennessee.
I did.
Tell me what you had done before you settled here.
Okay. I'm trying to think. I guess the latest thing that I had done there is I founded and operated a nonprofit there also, and it was an art gallery and performance space. And what we called ourselves the Second City Council, which caused some consternation initially with the real city council that we had back there. They weren't sure what we were going to be doing there, but what we did is we would address community issues the same as our city council did, but we would do it through the vehicle of art. And that would be any kind of art. We had like spoken word events. We had music that spoke to different issues. We certainly had visual arts. I'd say about every 6 weeks we would show not only artists from our community, but up and down the state. And they were juried shows. And what we did that would be both bringing some awareness into our community of what we had to offer, and also good for the artist, is we picked really top-name jurors to decide who would be in the show that people would submit, and then they'd go through. So we had like people from LACMA, which is the L.A. County Art Museum. We had people from the L.A. Times, like Pat Morrison. Most of the universities, like the department heads, so.
Yeah, I don't think we said exactly where that was.
Well, I'm a little leery to say where that was. It was California.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
But I'm not one of those.
You have, I think I saw on your website, you have a background in photography, right?
I do.
And your husband is an artisan.
Yes, he's a metalsmith. He's been a self-employed metalsmith for about 50 years, and he's done everything. He's been interviewed by Jay Leno, because my husband has a real love for the old cars from the teens. And so if somebody was going to take a car up to Pebble Beach Concourse and maybe they were missing a car, I can't think even what you call it. I was going to say a doorknob. I guess that is what they are. And it was a one-of-the-kind car, then he would do all the research necessary, try to find a photo of it, and then he would fabricate that. He's done jewelry. He's done architectural elements. Here locally, he did a steeple was being redone, and it had an 11-sided ball on the very top in Chucky. So he figured out how to craft that, which 11 sides is not easy.
Those kinds of talents and skills must have matched perfectly with your need to make this mill livable.
We were really lucky. Every owner, it was vacant for a long time, and there's pictures where it's, in fact, it was going to be torn down in the 80s. And then Earlene Ledford, who was a preservationist here locally, she wasn't going for it. And so she saved the mill. And then each person that's owned it since has put some love in it. So I have to say that when we bought it, we've done extensive restoration on the outside of it because of the moisture of the creek. So we brought in an actual restoration company. So we've done that. But we didn't have to do a whole lot inside. But his talents are amazing. Mm-hmm. And as things come up, I know that he'll be able to do whatever's necessary.
What is still here from the days when it was fully operational as a mill?
Just going back a little bit, in the 80s when they were going to tear the mill down, the grandson of the last active miller unfortunately liquidated a lot because they were going to tear it down. So he liquidated it. In fact, I finally found out recently it had been the town lore that some of the equipment had gone to Dollywood. And I thought, well, until I see that in writing. So I did a lot of research and contacted Dollywood, and we were able to prove that at least one piece went up there. So, but we have all the built-ins are still here. So that would be like the grain elevators, the chutes, the hearst, which is the platform where all the milling took place. That's still here. We have remnants of a few pieces of equipment that are kind of on their last legs, but we've bought or had donated to us pieces of equipment that match that, except that they're in good condition.
And you do have some of the original flour sacks.
We have both the material ones, and we also have Jason, when they bought the mercantile, found a secret little stash there of paper ones. So they were nice. And the other thing, I forgot about this, Faith, who's a Ledford, when she was cleaning out the mercantile, she found blueprints from this mill from 1901 when they were modernizing it. And so she donated those to us. There's like 3 pages of them, and it answers so many questions about they bringing the water to the mill, where the equipment sat, how it was run. So those were like a huge gift.
Well, each mill had its own design for its sacks and bags.
Yes, we ours have a really beautiful, we're lucky because we've made it into t-shirts for us to wear. We go to the Society for the Preservation of Old Mills every year, and they hold it in different states. And it's composed of people like us who have an interest, or owners of mills, engineers, just everybody, people that are interested in hydropower. So we do that every year, and ours is just a gorgeous, gorgeous logo. So,
what is your vision for this mill, let's say 5 to 10 years out?
That we keep growing. Right now, we're kind of focused on the research and the museum, but we're hoping to have, we have to have our roof redone first, and then after that, this is actually a 3-story mill. It doesn't look like it from the outside. It looks very small, but it's big. And on the 3rd floor, what we'd like to do is offer a free residency to a historian to be able to come, like maybe they're on summer break, or a student that is working on a thesis in history. We'd like to offer that to them. I would really like this community to stay as it is in terms of the environment. So it's very rural and green with the water. But I would also like us to offer a little more to the community.
And to give folks a better idea of where we are, this is not far from Washington College Academy and the community of Telford.
That's true. That's true. And even though we're Broyles-ville, we're considered part of limestone now. In the 1900s, we lost our post office, and so we became limestone then.
Do you remember what the last year of milling was here?
In our mill?
Mm-hmm.
It was in the 50s.
Do you have people coming by here who remember those years?
Yes, we were really fortunate. A couple of years ago, we had Betty Jane Hilton and her husband Robert come, and I did an oral interview with them. She grew up in Broyles-ville, and her family, I think it was her grandfather and her father, were both Broyles-ville residents. And so she was able to shed light on a lot of things. And we have a lot of people that used to deliver grain here that would say, oh, I remember the big tree we used to have to drive around. Or I remember my dad would say, you don't leave that doorway, because they considered it dangerous inside the mill. So the dad would be in here conducting business and the child could peek in the door, but didn't come in. So,
do you know what happened to the original wheel?
We don't know. We're assuming, and this is a big assumption, that it was not metal like a lot of them are, that it was wood and that it just deteriorated with time. I don't think that went to Dollywood. I'm sure that they built a brand new one. So I don't know. One of the things we're intending to do, there's a place in North Carolina that specializes in water wheel. And so as soon as we get a little more settled in other things that we're doing, and we make sure that, I don't know enough about cows. I don't want to do anything that will disturb the farming around here. So if it's not a problem for the cows to hear water wheel, then we'd like to install a water wheel on the outside.
This is a gorgeous area, and you are a photographer. What are your favorite spots for picture taking?
I have to say most of my focus since I've been here are either things I wander across that are real interesting, so I didn't set out. I just carry my camera all the time. So either that, or my big love is documenting the mills before they all fall down or they're repurposed into something else. And so I would say maybe I've spent extensive time in maybe 6 different mills that are really on their last legs, with holes in the floor, and sometimes I don't know what you call it, turkey vultures, I guess, are that's their home now. So you know, you have to be a little bit careful going in there, but I just want to show what was, since milling and mills were such an important part of a lot of the United States, but here in Tennessee, because initially we were more isolated, they were even more important.
Absolutely. Cheryl Bennett, thank you for joining us for Vital Voices.
Thank you so, so much for having us and allowing me to share what I do know at this point. Maybe another 10 years from now, you'll come back and I could tell you a whole bunch more.
Our guest has been Cheryl Bennett. She and her husband, Dwight, own the Broylesville Mill in rural Washington County, Tennessee. For Vital Voices, I'm Fred Sausman.